You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
For Dear Science today, we're joined by our expert, Professor Ellen Blackman. Welcome.
Thank you, Alex. It's actually nice out there.
Yeah, it was really cold this morning, but now it's sunny.
Nice, yeah.
It's good, a nice change.
Good crisp winter day, there we go. Yeah.
What does science have for us today?
Oh, many things. So we're going to kick off talking about vitamins, as you alluded to earlier. And so the question is, are vitamins good for you? And there's an answer that's not necessarily a yes or a no. Well, obviously yes, but it turns out that you can have too much of a good thing, okay? So let's go back to the year 2000. That was a big year. And in 2000, the USA officially announced that they'd eradicated measles, which is a great thing because measles is nasty. I remember having measles when I was a kid. Now, again, all of you in the studio are too young to remember, as bloody usual. You're all too young to remember that. But, yep, no, I went through measles, which was sort of a rite of passage in those days. But, you know, it's potentially very nasty. And, you know, people die from measles. Children die. So it's not a particularly good thing. And to have it eradicated is really good. And the reason it's eradicated is because of intensive vaccinations. Okay. Now, funnily enough, starting in January 2025, the USA had an outbreak of measles. Now, why would they have that? I can't possibly think.
I wonder.
Nothing comes to mind.
What's going on? Yeah.
But since January 2025, they had 4,271 cases up to May 28th, 2026. So, you know, this isn't a small number necessarily. So, in just after this outbreak occurred, a lady by the name of Dr. Suzanne Humphreys appeared on a thing called the Joe Rogan Show. I've never heard of, you know.
I'm familiar.
The Joe Rogan podcast. She appeared on that in February 2025. And her big thing was, okay, so we've got a measles outbreak. So she is a doctor. She was busy touting vitamin A and cod liver oil as being cures. So you could treat measles with vitamin A and cod liver oil. Now, vitamin A, obviously it's good for you. It's a vitamin, so you need it. It is essential, and it's essential for things like growth and vision and cell operations, cell
function. All the good stuff.
All of those things that we need, okay? And so, you know, as I said, we're talking about immunization here, that you know, most children are immunized, but the immunization rates, certainly in the States, have been falling over the past few years. So she was busy saying, okay, we've got vitamin A, cod liver oil, blah, 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 blah. So following her appearance on the Joe Rogan Show, there were a big spike in the number of Google searches for vitamin A measles, cod liver oil measles, okay? So some social scientists in the USA decided to have a look at these searches and actually sort of quantify them. So what they found was that the searches for vitamin A / measles went up 7.5% over just what would normally be expected. And the cod liver oil measles went up 1.3% over what would be expected. Okay. So far, so good. Sort of the thing that you might expect. However, at the same time, the poison centers in America reported, get this, a 38.7% spike in children's exposure to dangerous amounts of vitamin A. Okay. And so basically they are linking these two things. And then you're listening there and you think, well, dangerous amounts of vitamin A, sure, there's no such thing. Well, there absolutely is. And excess vitamin A can lead to such things as nausea and headaches and dizziness and liver damage and, in serious cases, actually death. Okay.
Okay, so and don't take too much vitamin
don't
A.
Don't take too much vitamin A, okay? And here's this person on the Joe Rogan Show busy saying, oh, yes, vitamin A, blah, 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 blah. So I always like telling this story. It's a horrendous story, actually. But we go back all the way to 1912, and an Australian Antarctic explorer by the name of Douglas Mawson, a very, very famous guy, he set out with three – well, there was a group of three of them, set out to explore the inner workings of Antarctica, etc., together with, you know, a few dogs, a couple of sleds, etc., etc. And then one day they went over a crevasse. One of them went down the crevasse with the sled that contained all of the food and everything. So there were two of them left, just basically the two of them and the dogs. And so they had to get back to civilization, and so they away they went. And the dogs started dying one by one because obviously they weren't getting fed, and so therefore they would start eating the dogs. So when a dog died, they would start feeding the dogs to the other dogs, and plus they would eat it themselves to survive. And the worst part of the dogs was the muscle or something, so they fed those to the dogs. The best part was the liver. Okay, and so they started chowing down on the liver. Now, unbeknownst to them, the liver concentrates vitamin A, especially dog liver. So you've got lots and lots of vitamin A in dog liver. So unintendingly, what was happening was that they were slowly getting poisoned by vitamin A. And so one of them actually succumbed, so they believe, to vitamin A poisoning. Really, really, really nasty things start happening. Your skin starts peeling off, okay? And the soles of Mawson's feet actually started peeling off.
That's quite grim.
Okay? Grim is one word for it, yeah. And so eventually Mawson made it back. It was a heck of a journey, but the other guy by the name of Mertz, he ended up unfortunately succumbing to vitamin A poisoning. So and the sort of one of the reasons why it can be bad for you is because it's soluble in fat. It's not soluble in water, so you can't pee out any excess. Like things like vitamin C and stuff like that, you can always, you know, pee out. You can't do that with this. So it concentrates in the fat in the body and everything. You can't necessarily get rid of it easily. So I think there's a lesson there somewhere in all of that. But, you know, beware of what you believe when you listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
You know, just believe what I say, sort of thing. You know?
The experts.
Yeah, the experts. Yeah, believe the – I think we've talked about this.
We have. It's almost an exact kind of situation that would be, right? Believe in the opinions, not the expertise.
Yes. Yep.
But, okay. Wow. That's a health PSA. What up next? I think we've got my favorite insect.
Yes.
I love bees.
And I do get a chance to shout out to my favorite TV program ever, probably Arrested Development. Bees! But nobody has seen Arrested Development because you're all too young. Again. Good grief. Everyone should go and watch Arrested Development. It's the funniest program ever made. Anyway, so here's a question. Are humans the most intelligent species on the planet?
Wow.
And I think being humans, we would probably like to think that we are. I think we probably are. But, you know, there are many sort of species, living species, that can do stuff that we can't, I think. But normally you sort of look at insects and you think, insects, pah. You know, what do they know? Well, it turns out actually quite a lot. And so a bunch of Finnish researchers were interested in studying bumblebees and whether or not bumblebees could actually do problem solving. Okay, because that's something that, you know, humans can obviously do, and that's possibly something that distinguishes us from many living things on the planet. And so what they discovered is that, yes, that bumblebees actually can problem solve, which is very, very interesting. So what they did was they set up this little enclosure, and in this little enclosure, which sort of wasn't big enough for the bees to fly, what they had was they put a blue artificial flower on the roof of this little enclosure. And that's covered in sort of sucrose and stuff. So it's a nice sugary treat for the bumblebee, if it can get there. And inside the enclosure was this little styrofoam ball. And basically what the bee had to do was to roll the styrofoam ball to a position under the flower. Then he can climb up on the styrofoam ball and you know, get that sugary treat. And that was the only way that he could get the sugary treat, okay? So the question was, could the bumblebees actually figure out that this is what they had to do? So what they did was they divided the bees into three groups, okay? So the first group had seen both the styrofoam ball and the blue flower separately. Okay. The next group had had seen one of the blue flower or the styrofoam ball. Okay. And the third group had seen neither beforehand. Okay. And so what they found was that only the bees that had seen both before, so both the styrofoam ball and the blue flower, could actually solve the problem of how to get to the sugary treat. Okay. And so there's a wonderful video that accompanies this, that they actually videoed the bees, and he's busy rolling the styrofoam ball and then climbing up on the ball, and it's all quite brilliant. But there was the possibility that the bees were just maybe getting lucky rolling the ball to the right place, because apparently bees are known to be able to roll balls. They've seen this before.
This has been studied.
This has indeed been. I don't know who studies this, but people do. So they had to take the chance factor away. And so what they then did was that they sort of divided the enclosure into two, so that the ball was sort of in one half of the enclosure, the flowers in the other half of the enclosure, and that the bee couldn't see the flower in the part of the enclosure where the ball was. So he'd have to trot around, have a look where the flower was, trot back, figure out where the ball is, and then figure out how to get the ball around to where the flower was. So that takes the chance factor out of it, apparently. And so they did this, and what they found was that 23 of the 30 bees got this right the first time. That's quite astonishing.
That's a good turnout.
And so they're sort of likening it to maybe giving a human a hammer and a nail, but something that they've never actually seen before. So this is the whole point of the thing, that the bees had never seen these things before, okay? And so there's no training at all, nothing at all. They're just given these two things essentially and being asked to put them together and figure out how to do this. And as I say, like giving somebody who's never seen a hammer and a nail a hammer and a nail. Given enough time, you're going to figure out what to do with the hammer and the nail. But if you're only given a nail or you're only given a hammer, and then you're sort of given the other half straight away and everything, then you're not necessarily sure what to do with it. And so basically they are taking this as proof that now the bees are actually problem solving, that this is them essentially thinking on the fly. And what they noticed was that the bees would take a certain amount of time, that it was almost like they were sort of, you know, walking around and actually thinking, like humans would do, probably, you know, how to actually solve this problem. How do I get from there to there? How do I do this? And I think it's brilliant. Absolutely
so
brilliant.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool little guys.
So there you go. Who would have thought it? Bees, huh? Bees!
And
Arrested
what,
Development.
And
just
what? Shout out.
Yes, yes.
And what do we have to finish this up?
The Stroop task. Anyone know what the Stroop task is?
Not a single bell is ringing.
Okay. This is really cool, actually, and I have tried this, and it's bloody difficult. But, okay, so you get a list of words, and these words are colours, okay? Except the colour that the word is printed in is a different colour from what the word actually is, okay? So you've got the word yellow, but it's printed in green. And you've got the word blue, but it's printed in red. And what you then have to do is to go down the list of these words, and you have to say not what the word is, but what the colour is, what the actual colour that they're printed in is. And it's really quite tough, okay? But humans can basically do this. It just takes them a while. You know, you've actually got to sit down and actually think about what you're doing, you know. You've got to suppress your vision of the actual word, the writing of the word, and you've got to focus on the actual colour that the word is written in. So that's the Stroop task, okay? And so, as I say, that's quite difficult for humans, but it's absolutely doable. So if humans can do it, then supposedly AI can do it, because AI can do everything, okay? Hooray, okay. So some workers in the USA decided to test a bunch of AI LLMs on how good they are at doing this. Basically, what they found was that they're okay, but the longer the list, the worse they get. And they're kind of equating it to sort of AI being a bit bored. Okay, getting a bit bored with going through this. So what they found was a 91% accuracy for a list of 5 words. Okay, 91% accuracy. But you go to 40 words and it goes down to 15% accuracy. Okay, which is not great, really. Now, the really tricky one is where they mix them up. Okay, now, the list of words has your particular colour written in not the same colour, okay? But now they've got a mixed list where some of the colours, some of the words have the correct colour and some of them are written in different colours, okay? So that's a mixed list. So that makes it really, really tough, okay? Mm. And what they found was that the LLMs were close to 0% when they actually mixed these, okay? And so, you know, the AI is concentrating on what's written, okay? It can't seem to stop looking at the actual letters and the words and focus on the actual colour. So, you know, there is, dare I say it, yet another failing of AI. So maybe we shouldn't be quite so quick to, you know, adopt this. Maybe let's wait until it's a bit better, huh?
Yeah, maybe let's think about the things that we can actually do without it.
But, anyway, they're not going to take over your job, Alex. No, surely not.
One can hope. Well, anyway, thanks, Alan, for joining us. Thank you, Motet, and thank you, Science. Ngā Kōrero Rererangi Aviation Conversations returns on 2nd of July. Enjoy a lively panel discussion on the dark sky movement featuring guest speakers Nikki MacArthur, MNZM, and Josh Aoraki. Book now at motat.nz.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to Motat, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.